This is a federal tax update for April 21st, 2008. This week, the mailbox rule comes up once again. The Tax Update podcast, intended for tax professionals, is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners are expected to do their own research to confirm items raised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. The podcast and the document may be reproduced freely as long as no fee is charged for use of the document or the podcast. Such prohibited use include using the podcast or documents part of a CP presentation for which a fee is charged. This podcast is sponsored by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.linebergservices.com. Lineberg Information Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters, as well as access to a library of useful information to tax practitioners that subscribe to their services. Visit them on the web at www.linebergservices.com. The topic we've covered more than once appeared again in the Court of Appeals decision, this time with the Third Circuit Court of Appeals weighing in, and not in a way the IRS was going to be happy with. This time, the case in question is that of the Philadelphia Marine Association International Longshoremen's Association Pension Fund et al. Versus Commissioner, 2008, Tax Notes Today 74-16. And the question comes up again as to whether or not a document was deemed timely filed. In this particular case, the fact the taxpayer established evidence of mailing well prior to the due date for filing the claim for refund caused the Third Circuit to apply the common law mailbox rule as prima facie proof of timely delivery of the document. This case is somewhat unique, as in the other cases we've looked at recently, including our recent discussion of the result in Gibson versus Commissioner from the Tenth Circuit, the matter was a mailing on the final date for filing the return or filing the document with the court. And the result in this case that we have today of the Philadelphia Marine Trade Association would likely have been very different had the taxpayer waited until that last date to mail the document in question. Now let's look at the saga of Section 7502 and review this again, because we've been down this road a few times. There is little question Section 7502, as it stands alone, provides a very clear means to prove filing before the IRS, including filing via a method that assures the IRS will receive the document after the last date for filing, which is interesting to remember about 7502. We can place a document in the mail on the last date for filing. It will not be received or filed with the IRS in that, in essence, in reality, it won't show up at the IRS offices until clearly after the due date for filing. A lot of people took advantage of that last week on April 15th at the post office, or all these people lined up placing their tax returns in. Those tax returns did not make it to the various IRS service centers that evening before midnight on the 15th. But Section 7502 provides for us that, in essence, so long as the return is postmarked by the U.S. Postal Service on or before the date for filing, it is presumed to be received by the IRS as of that date. That becomes the date of filing. Now, it is really in many ways a protection over the late receipt, because we know it will be late. And in fact, it even specifically allows us essentially to file via a means where we know the document will arrive after the due date. The provision essentially excuses late delivery of the return or payment to the IRS itself by providing that so long as the document is postmarked by the United States Postal Service on or before the due date, it's deemed delivered to the IRS on that date. Now, if our somewhat eccentric taxpayer decides to deliver the document by some other means, let's say a carrier pigeon, for instance, then that pigeon's got to get the documents to the IRS employee before midnight on the last day for filing. Or since the IRS office likely won't be open at midnight, before the time at which the office closes that day. That is, Section 7502 only provides protection for late deliveries for the limited subset of delivery methods that it endorses. If you use a delivery method other than those endorsed by Section 7502, you have to make sure the actual document gets to the IRS or the court prior to the end of the day, which is the final day for filing that document with the agency or court. As well, it's important to note that to make use of this protection, we got to show the date the postmark was applied to the document. Well, that's kind of problematical since the document's heading to the IRS and we won't have it. We're going to lose that evidence. In fact, if we ever had it, because most likely you didn't stand there and watch the gentleman postmark your letter. In fact, you probably couldn't watch him postmark that letter in most cases. It's going to go back, get postmarked at some point, and go through the mails that evening. Therefore, Section 7502C1 provides a solution to this problem, which is the use of registered mail. And that statutorily provides that basically if any return claim statement or other document or payment is set by United States registered mail, such registration shall be prima facie evidence that the document was delivered to the agency to which it was addressed, and the date of registration shall be deemed the postmark date. So regardless of whether the document is actually postmarked by the Postal Service, and we know under the regulations it's supposed to be, but it doesn't matter if it was actually postmarked, if the letter envelope actually has a postmark that's after the due date, as long as we have a date of registration for that document that was on or before April 15th for those filing last week, we have a timely filing, and we have prima facie proof the IRS received our document. Note that the registered mail exception, interestingly enough, of the exception we're going to talk about today, is purely statutory. That is, the IRS wasn't required to write a single regulation to enable this option, but rather Congress did so automatically. However, Congress has added other options that are enabled, but only as the IRS has decided to implement them via regulations. The most notable of these are found at 7502C2, which involves certified mail and electronic filing. And that provision provides the IRS is authorized to provide by regulation the extent to which the provisions of the registered mail rules will provide prima facie evidence of delivery and postmark date shall be applied to certified mail and electronic filing. The fact that these provisions are only effective as implemented regulations was made painfully clear to the taxpayer in the 1960 Third Circuit case of Bocudo versus Commissioner. In that case, the taxpayer had a certified mailing receipt in hand, but the receipt was issued on February 11, 1959. That was after Congress had added that provision noted above related to certified mail. That came in the Technical Amendments Act of 1958, but before the IRS had issued regulations implementing that provision, which didn't come out till January of 1960. Thus, even though Bocudo had a certified mailing receipt issued on the due date for filing their petition with the tax court, and even though the postal regulations said that the postal employee was supposed to postmark it on that same date, it didn't get postmarked till the next day. And his problem is that actual postmark on the envelope was held to be controlling, and the petition was deemed not to be timely filed, though it would have been had the same situation taken place today and we had a certified mail receipt. Thus, it's important to note that for when you have to invoke 7502, unlike horseshoes, close doesn't count here. As well, provisions were added more recently to allow the IRS to expand the list to include certain private delivery services. This is found in 7502F. Again, for private delivery services, the secretary, or the IRS essentially, has to designate delivery services that will qualify for this purpose, and we have to follow those designations rather strictly. You have to use the proper type of service. If you remember the case of Gibson versus Commissioner, he had placed that document in the hands of an employee who, if he had used the private delivery service, would have been able to have provided him proof, but rather he gave that employee the envelope to be certified mail. He had evidence that the document had, in fact, been given to the employee at the mailing service on the day for filing, but for whatever reason, that document did not actually get mailed certified mail until the following day. Because he had failed to meet the technical requirements of 7502, he could not invoke 7502 to prove timely filing. And since the document, in fact, never went anywhere until the next day, and it's clear it didn't go anywhere until the next day, reality was he was stuck without a timely filing of his tax court petition. Like horseshoes again, doesn't work. It's not horseshoes. It's not going to be a horseshoes game. You can't get close. Now, the key question we run into, though, is this Section 7502C provision the exclusive way to prove timely filing, or is it more properly viewed as an additional protection the taxpayer has as opposed to other means that could be used to prove timely filing? The IRS position is very clear. To the IRS, they state that when Congress enacted Section 7502 and 7502C, certified and registered mail and now electronic filing and private delivery services as implemented in other regulations are the only way to prove timely filing of a document if, in fact, the service shows no record of having received it. The Second and the Sixth Circuit have agreed with that view. In Deutsch versus Commissioner, the Second Circuit held that, to quote from them, the taxpayer argued that Section 7502 creates a presumption in favor of the taxpayer and that if such section does not apply, the taxpayer can prove delivery and timeliness by other evidence without the benefit of the presumption of 7502. We disagree. The exception embodying Section 7502 in the cases construing it demonstrate a penchant for an easily applied objective standard. See Fishman versus Commissioner. Whereas here, the exception of 7502 is not literally applicable, the courts have consistently rejected testimony or other evidence as proof of the actual date of mailing. See Shipley, Drake, and, interestingly enough, Bocuto. In 1986, Miller versus Commissioner, the Sixth Circuit explicitly agreed with the Sixth Circuit specifically agreed that Section 7502 is the exclusive method for proving timely filing. However, more recently, the Eighth and Ninth Circuits have disagreed with this holding. The Ninth Circuit in Anderson versus United States allowed a taxpayer to submit evidence that the affidavit of a friend that accompanied her to the post office that the return was mailed on September 15, 1986, well before the last date for filing a claim for refund, which would have been April 15, 1988. The IRS claimed not to have received the return until they contacted Anderson in late 1988 and thus denied a refund claim. The Ninth Circuit note, the statute itself does not reflect a clear intent by Congress to displace the common law mailbox rule. Accordingly, we decline to read Section 7502 as carving out exclusive exceptions to the old common law rule. In an earlier decision the Ninth Circuit cites in the Anderson decision, the Eighth Circuit also concludes that Section 7502 did not displace the common law mailbox rule, but rather adds to the alternative the taxpayers has for proving delivery. In the Wood case contained a detailed defense of this view of Section 7502. The court begins by holding, when interpreting a statute, we must consider the statute in light of judicial concepts existing before it. In this case, the common law presumption of delivery was enacted. The normal rule of statutory construction is that if Congress intends for legislation to change the interpretation of a judicially created concept, it makes that intent specific. Thus, it is proper to consider that Congress acts with knowledge of existing law and that absent a clear manifestation of contrary intent, a newly enacted or revised statute is presumed to be harmonious with existing law and its judicial construction. Accordingly, for Section 7502 to completely displace the common law presumption of delivery, we must find some statutory or legislative indication that Congress so intended. The Eighth Circuit found no such clear indication in Section 7502 itself. And based on that, the court goes on to conclude, thus, as we have indicated, if Congress intended that subsection C was to be the exclusive instance in which presumption of delivery could apply, we think it would have said so. Given that Congress presumptively intended Section 7502 would operate to alleviate hardship for the benefit of taxpayer, we think that subsection C is better read as a safe harbor which does not exclude the application of presumption of delivery in those cases in which the terms of the statute are otherwise met. And the Wood case goes on to criticize the Second and Sixth Circuit decisions, noting that those courts would find that subsection C is the exclusive instance in which a presumption can apply, cite no legislative history for support. It is also important to note that the court also holds under Section 7502 the act of mailing is not significant for the purpose of the statute, but placement of a postmark is. That distinction is going to be important in today's case. Now it is time to hear from the Third Circuit. The Third Circuit is a circuit we've noted previously in this podcast. They were the ones who issued the opinion in Bocuto where a taxpayer had tough luck by getting certified mail receipt dated the day before an actual postmark was applied and prior to the IRS issuing regulations that made the date on a certified mail receipt the equivalent of the date of registration and with registered mail, thus being the date of postmark. Thus, some not paying close attention might have believed the Third Circuit agreed with the Second and Sixth positions that Section 7502 was the exclusive way to prove timely filing. But that ignores the fact that in Bocuto, the taxpayer was explicitly trying to make use of Section 7502 itself in the face of the actual postmark that was the day after the date for filing, and before the IRS had implemented regulations that allowed the certified mail receipt to be deemed to be the date of the postmark. In essence, Bokuto was facing evidence of an actual postmark dated after the date of filing, and all he had was evidence that he had given it to the post office before that date, and that under their rules they should have postmarked it that date, but reality was they apparently didn't. So Bokuto was out of luck. It's a very much a foot-fault case, but a very important foot-fault case. You have to get it right if you're going to invoke 7502. In the case of Philadelphia Marine Association, the International Longshoremen's Association Pension Fund versus Commissioner that we have today, the Third Circuit made it clear they were adopting the position of the Eighth and Ninth Circuit. That is, Section 7502 added to, rather than subtracted from, a taxpayer's options to prove timely filing. In this case, the taxpayer sent the document in question by overnight mail on May 8, 2003. The final date for them to have filed a refund claim administrative with the IRS was June 25, 2003, over a month after the date they filed by overnight mail. Presumptively, under the common law mailbox rule, a document sent by overnight mail on May 8th would be expected to be delivered on May 9th, and we have a presumption it was, therefore, delivered to the IRS on May 9th. Similarly, a later letter that also raised a claim for refund that was sent by first-class mail on June 13 would have been presumed, given the short distance involved, to have been delivered the next day on June 14th, or very certainly at least well before the June 25th due date for a first-class letter in the normal course of mailing. The IRS, of course, claimed that Section 7502 displaced the common law mailbox rule, as was found in the Deutsch and Miller decision. The IRS also cited the Third Circuit's own holding in Bokuto, where the Third Circuit stated that unless a taxpayer can fit himself within one of the statutory exceptions, he is bound by this rule. To the IRS view, that was the Third Circuit saying, you got to meet 7502C, or you're simply out of luck. But the Third Circuit, in this opinion, said, we don't read our old opinion quite that way. We think you're over-reading it because you're ignoring the facts of the case. The Third Circuit panel in this case says this is a different issue than the one that was decided in Bokuto. In Bokuto, the taxpayer delivered the document to the post office in question on the final day for filing and obtained what was, at that instant, a document that did not fix the postmark date, very much as if today a taxpayer received a proof of mailing document from the post office, rather than having received the certified mail receipt. They got the proof of mailing because that's cheaper. And, of course, the guy behind the counter says, well, this proved you mailed it today, and that's what you need to do. Well, maybe not quite. So when the actual document arrived at its destination with an actual postmark that was dated one day later than the final day for filing, that would be the equivalent if you got a proof of mailing slip on April 15th, but the post office, for whatever reason, didn't postmark your letter until April 16th, now you have a problem. You have a document to prove something that doesn't prove it, you know, is not considered evidence under 7502C, and you're faced with an actual postmark that was clearly applied after the date the actual postmark controls, you're in trouble now. The common law mailbox rule was useless in that case. Why to Bokuto? He gave it to the post office on the last day for filing. Even if I file via overnight mail, if I gave the post office a letter on April the 15th, presumptive delivery would occur via overnight mail on April the 16th, which is a day too late. Therefore, that presumptive delivery under the common law mailbox rule, if we had a situation where we without regard to 7502, let's say 7502 wasn't there, that would be a late filing. 7502 allows that late delivery to be okay because we can roll back to the postmark date, but we invoke 7502 and have to meet the rules. The Third Circuit makes it clear, if you invoke 7502, you got to dot the I's and cross the T's. But if you've mailed early enough so that we can use the common law mailbox rule, so you don't have to rely on 7502, then the evidence provided for the common law mailbox rule, we can consider a much broader range of items in proving whether or not the document was deposited in the mail with sufficient time for us to expect for it to have arrived at the location for filing on or before the date that is prescribed as the final date for that document to reach that location. The court notes that they don't buy in on the theory that 7502 repealed the common law mailbox rule. The court addresses that point and comes to the same conclusion as the Eighth and Ninth Circuit. The court notes, for starters, the text of 7502 does nothing to affect the mailbox rule in cases such as the one before us. Quote, it is a well-established principle of statutory construction that the common law ought not to be deemed repealed unless the language of a statute is clear, be clear and explicit for this purpose. By its terms, Section 7502A applies only to cases where the pertinent document was delivered to the government after the filing deadline. Here, by contrast, neither party claims a refund request were delivered after the filing deadline of June 25th. To repeat, the fund produces evidence that O'Neill sent the May 8th and June 13th level letters by overnight and first-class mail, respectively. If that is true, the letters would presumably have arrived well before the June 25th deadline. The government, meanwhile, claims it has no record of having received the letters at all. The text of 7502A, therefore, does not direct a result here. Thus, Section 7502C, which limits applications to cases in which 7502 generally applies. You know, for purposes of this section, if any return claim statement is sent by United States registered mail, is also inapplicable. 7502C only applies if 7502 is being brought into the mix. Since this section, 7502, does not have to be used by the court to make this decision, the court holds 7502C is irrelevant. The court goes on then to directly address the argument that Congress intended 7502 to be the exclusive remedy by noting, even looking beyond the text, we see no indication that Congress intended to preempt the mailbox rule for taxpayers who do not seek 7502's protection. As an initial matter, we find nothing in the legislative history of Section 7502 to support the preemption argument. Moreover, as a matter of logic, it is difficult to imagine that Congress, by passing a law that was designed to protect taxpayers who meet Section 7502's requirements, would, without so stating, simultaneously seek to roll back the protections for taxpayers that already exist at common law. Congress' intent, which we believe, was to supplement, not supplant, means by which a taxpayer can timely file documents with the IRS. And that's the major distinction, shall we say, between the two views. The Second and Sixth Circuit emphasized their view that this was a means to simplify and get rid of litigation in this area by coming up with a very simple, straight, objective test. Taxpayer either produces the document in question or they don't. Don't produce a document, it wasn't filed timely. Do produce a document, it was. The Eighth, Ninth, and Third Circuits tell us, no, Congress wanted to give taxpayers a right. So they gave the taxpayers a right to eliminate the whole question about the common law mailbox rule and give themselves absolute proof regardless. And by doing so, they allowed taxpayers to know exactly what would count as proof. But they didn't mean that if they didn't have that proof, they couldn't make use of the common law mailbox rule and provide what proof would have worked under those rules. Now, it's important to note we do have the IRS striking back. We have proposed regulations that were issued back in 2004 where the IRS indicated they're going to attempt to reverse the decisions in the Eighth and Ninth Circuits via regulation. These proposed regulations, which still have not been made final here 4 years later, would modify the regulations under Section 7502 and add the following. Under Regulation 301.7502-1, for timely mailing of documents, a payment treated as timely filing and paying. Under E1, it would now be added that other than direct proof of actual delivery, proof of proper use of registered or certified mail is the exclusive means to establish prima facie evidence of delivery of a document to the agency, officer, or office with which the document is required to be filed. No other evidence of a postmark or a mailing will be prima facie evidence of delivery or raise a presumption that the document was delivered. Now, it's not clear, given the positions outlined by the circuits that found Congress did not intend to repeal the mailbox rule, that they would find this regulation valid. But it is important to note this regulation has a proposed effective date for any documents filed after September 21, 2004. So if it was made final, the IRS would argue it applies to documents already filed and those we are filing now, even in the 3rd, 8th, 9th, and 10th circuits. So where do we stand? Well, it's easy to get confused by the cases, but once you sort it out, it's not necessarily that confusing, But it is important for those of us in circuits that say there is a mailbox rule that still applies, not to get overly broad when we attempt to apply that rule. This particular case would not have turned out as well for the taxpayer had they mailed the claim on the final day for doing so. They were saved by a presumption of actual physical delivery of the document prior to the final date for filing that claim. Such a presumption would not have applied to a document delivered to the post office on the due date for filing, because you can't presume the post office is going to somehow get that document to the IRS on the same day. In that case, the taxpayer would have had to rely on Section 7502 and at the very least been able to show a postmark was applied at the time. That evidence of the application of a postmark was allowed in the estate of Wood. So if you could show, but you have to then be able to show that a postmark was applied. If you merely handed it to a postal clerk and nobody saw the postmark be applied, and now the IRS claims the letter never came through, you just are out of luck. What it does suggest, though, is that for taxpayers in circuit that have indicated the mailbox rule survives, and that's the 3rd, 8th, 9th, and 10th, it would be prudent to mail documents well enough in advance of due date to gain the mailbox presumption in addition to any protection that might exist under 7502C. Taxpayers have been known to misplace certified mail receipts, so it might not be a bad idea to have a second way to get a presumption of timely filing. That is, do it by certified mail and do it a few days ahead of time. As well, even in those circuits, it's clear a receipt in compliance with the rules of 7502 provides the best protection for a taxpayer. That is, in those courts' view, the whole intent of this provision. And of course, as the Gibson case made clear, it's important to get that receipt from the United States Postal Service itself, not from an outfit providing mailing services. And obviously, clients in any circuits mailing off documents on the due date really have to be very, very careful to properly comply with Section 7502 or face the risk of being deemed to have filed the document late. The Bocoto case is still valid in the Third Circuit. And there, if somebody just had a proof of mailing and they had applied and the postmark actually showed a different date, they're simply out of luck. And that's likely the result even in the 8th, 9th, and 10th circuits. Now, this has been the tax update for April the 21st, 2008. The tax update is brought to you, as always, by Lineberg Information Services. Visit them on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. This has been the tax update.